How long have you been doing things politically out in the city?
This version, besides just growing up, it's basically since 1991. I moved back here after graduate school in 1990.
Where did you go?
I went undergrad at Stanford, and then my doctoral work is at Northwestern.
Oh, okay.
The only reason I moved back to Oregon, I grew up in Medford. The only reason I moved back here was because I re-met a high school friend and married her.
Well, that's a good reason.
And she had an actual job.
I don't think I have to sit over there if you don't want that.
Oh, no, no. It's fine. It's fine. It'll pick things up.
Yeah, Joyce and I met. I asked, but I didn't think you were here in the 70s. Joyce and I met. She was administrator of the House Democratic Majority Office.
Oh, great.
In the late 70s.
Uh-huh.
And that's where we met. And she's sort of a political junkie, too.
Yeah.
As much. Your junkiness tends to diminish when you get retired, but
yeah.
On the other hand, you have more time to do it in a way, too. But anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. The details kind of aren't as important as kind of where they're going. Yeah. So I was growing up in Southern Oregon then.
Mm-hmm.
And so my high school social studies teacher was Al Densmore.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I know.
I knew Van Hannon forever.
Yep.
It's interesting. I interviewed Gary Wilhelms last week, who was from Klamath Falls, I didn't realize.
Yep.
And so we were doing the name game all over in there, too.
Yeah, I started in the Capitol in 1970 with the Statesman.
Uh-huh.
And I worked over there for 6 years before I went to the AP.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I was there long enough.
Yeah, absolutely.
I have about 35 years, but...
Yeah. But that gives you perspective that I want, because you were running into Vic Atiyah when he was Senator Atiyah.
Right.
And then watching his 74 campaign, and then as he successfully transitions to being governor and things like that.
Well, I'll try to offer what I can. I don't know about it.
Well, the thing is with you, there's also, I can go back and dig in the files as well. Because, oddly enough, you wrote kind of a diary.
Yeah, I've got a bunch of stuff there, yeah. It's funny with the internet now, you can call up things maybe you want and don't want, but
yeah.
You know, it's just
almost
infinite.
I was talking with Dana Timms last week, and he was remembering, because he started with the Registered Guard in 79.
Yeah.
And he was remembering Ed Fadeley calling Atiyah Ayatollah Atiyah.
Oh, really?
And which would fit with Ed. And so I was trying to track that down. You couldn't find it. And so,
well, since Atiyah was of an Iranian descent, and that probably didn't go over very well.
Well, but I finally found it in a Wayne Thompson article. Atiyah called himself that.
Oh, in really?
A Dorchester skit.
Oh, okay.
So it's then I'm going to talk to Wayne as well, who's not very well.
He's not too well?
No.
He's still in Oregon. He's still around.
Yeah, he's still around. He's still around. But he's got back problems and
things
like that. So I sent that article to him, and lo and behold, he said, oh, when I left the Oregonian, they just gave me these boxes. I'm not sure they have them, but I have all these articles. So he's going through all his articles.
Oh. Well.
So I'll eventually talk to him, or he'll send me a bunch of articles.
All I did was I went on the Oregonian archive this morning to refresh myself. I just did a little scan through a few articles. I wasn't sure where you were headed, but
yeah.
Anyway, Vic was the first Arab American governor.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Not that it wasn't that big a deal. I asked Denny Miles if he ever polled for that, and he said, it never occurred to them to do anything like that.
I never heard it brought up.
Yeah, yeah.
Frankly, pro or con. I mean,
yeah. Absolutely.
Does he still have brothers alive?
He had two older brothers, and one of them died 2 years ago, and one of them is still alive.
But the rug business probably isn't.
Yeah.
He's got sons.
It's to the next generation. And then actually there's a fourth generation that's very interested as well. So the rug business is going fine. But it's not Vic's son. It's one of the other's sons.
Oh, okay.
Vic's son.
Okay.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Yeah, Vic's son and the rug business didn't work out. But then he started his own rug business and married a woman who speaks Chinese. And so they do stuff from China.
Oh, yeah.
They do Chinese rugs, actually.
Oh, okay.
So he's in the business, but not in the Tia Brothers.
Well, that sounds like it's flourishing.
Yeah, yeah. It's doing great. And fascinating to learn about that business as well. So I'm recording all this archival quality. It's eventually going to go into the archives at Pacific. And then I take it and I snip it up by whatever we talk about and, you know, use it for my own stuff to figure out how to write this darn book.
Yeah. When did you start on it?
Vic asked me in October of 2013, and I was able to interview him several times before he died. But I just started a sabbatical just at the beginning of February, end of January. So it's been dive in, do interviews, a little bit of research, but, you know, classes kind of take priority.
Yeah.
So it's just the deep dive has just started.
But now you're free of that for a little while.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Basically have until August to really dig into this and get things really, really started and grounded in there. And in the middle of all that, our governor blew up, so there was 2 weeks.
Well, that's another thing. And if you linger a minute when you're done with this, you get your opinion on what the hell happened in his mind and your opinion. But anyway,
yeah,
you know, I've known Kitz Harbor a long time, you know, since, well, I guess 79 when he started the house. Anyway, we don't need to go into that.
Yeah.
It's a side thing, but I don't know what happened to his judgment. I just don't understand it.
No.
I was on the Ethics Commission for 5 years. And, and he, she, and probably he are going to be found guilty of a whole bunch of violations, I think, if they ever carry through with it. So, anyway. Some people think he was mistreated by the press and hounded out of office. And, you know, I was, being me, I have mixed feelings about that. But
yeah.
Anyway, it was very strange. I've never seen a political event like that in this state.
Yeah. No, it's crazy.
Somebody fall that fast.
Yeah. It's just crazy. Crazy. So you started in 1970. Did you have interactions with Atiyah in those early days? I mean, he's in a minority that gets smaller and smaller and smaller, even as he becomes the majority leader. But
not very much until he was minority leader. And I think during at least one session they were down to six.
Yeah, they had six and they had seven the session before.
The phone booth caucus.
Right.
So, you know, I had some dealings with him then, but the kind of dealings the press would have with a minority leader of six, you know, didn't, not too much.
Yeah.
But I gave first impressions of him, and which carried on through. He was a very consistent person about everything. It seemed to me, anyway.
Uh-huh. What were some of those consistencies?
Well, he's politician, he was rock steady. He was, you know, other people I'm sure have told you this, but he was really low key. You know, you couldn't, I never saw him get mad in the sense of body language mad. And I saw him times when he was pleased, but there wasn't a lot of difference in his body language and his expression. Well, you could tell when he was irritated.
Yeah.
But as far as I would be described as irritated, because he wasn't a guy that stomped around, and he wasn't a Peter Courtney, you know, the polar opposite. But so he was consistent in his demeanor. He was the way he worked was behind the scenes a lot. He never drew attention to himself. very even tempered, personable. Other people probably have told you this in the press, but he, when he left office, I was president of the press corps, and we made a plaque up and presented it to him, and for his accessibility and treatment of the press. And I told him that he was the most accessible governor I'd covered, and that included McCall.
Mm-hmm.
Atiyah came down to the press room probably about once a week and just wandered through.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever was there, he'd talk to anybody and answer any questions, and, you know, ask him the way he wanted to, but he'd hold press conferences every week, or not every week, probably. I've seen that. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was that common, but he held regular ones,
mm-hmm.
Whether he had anything to announce or not. And one anecdote you might be interested in, I think it was Ron Blankenbaker, but Vic would call reporters back at night,
mm-hmm.
and reporters don't think tried to call governors that often at night, just assuming they wouldn't get through. But there was some incident here in Oregon, and I can't remember it, but Vic was in Phoenix, Arizona, and I think, and some kind of a flap came up, and I think it was Blankenbaker that called him, but got through to him at night down there, and he called him back. And I wish I could remember the context better.
Yeah.
I don't remember what the controversy was, but that reminds me, you know, you've probably seen the Trader Vic,
yep.
thing. I coined that, I think.
Oh, you did? Great.
Yeah, I'll take credit for that.
Uh-huh.
Blankenbaker, you remember, of course.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good friend of mine, but
mm-hmm.
He wrote biting columns about everybody. But
yeah.
He called Vic initially Governor Gulliver
mm-hmm.
because of these trade missions he went off on, and Ron would poke fun at him once in a while. I said, yeah, you know, it's a good name for him would be Trader Vic. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's where that started, I think. Blankenbaker popularized it.
Yeah.
But feel free to jump in with a question
if
I'm being too free-form with this. But Vic accomplished a lot. In very hard times, and aside from budget things, he accomplished environmental things, and I was reading the old clippings, started Oregon Food Chair, and things that
mm-hmm.
Wouldn't pop in people's mind, like McCall and the Straw and the Greenway or something like that, because he didn't make big deals of it. And the businesses he got to locate here, from, he was down in Silicon Valley in the early days, and he got the unitary tax repealed,
mm-hmm.
which helped bring some of the high-tech folks up here. And but it was a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff, and he was a good fit for governor at that point because he had so much legislative experience. He knew the people. I mean, he knew how to work the legislature, and he had a lot of friends and contacts there. And, you know, he knew you'd get a lesson in the legislature is you line your votes up before mm-hmm. you try to do something. And governors don't always do that.
Mm-hmm.
That's an aside, but I think Payne and Barbara Roberts, you know, tried to push a sales tax down the legislature's throat and backfired on her because she got in front of them and it didn't work.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Vic did things that, and I think I saw a quote in one of those clippings that you can get a lot of done if you don't care who gets the credit.
Mm-hmm.
And so he wasn't a showboater, he was the opposite mm-hmm. of that.
So did him being behind the scenes make it harder to cover him? I mean, he's talking to the press, but as you said, he would say what he wanted to say. he has this neat kind of triage list about how he would respond to questions and things. But so did it make it harder to figure out what was going on?
Oh, I don't know that it was. I think as much as politicians disclose to the press about what they're doing to manipulate me, which is a bad word, but mm-hmm. to work the levers of power behind the scenes, he was pretty forthright about it.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't duck a lot of questions. I mean, probably not as many as some politicians do, but he had a very rough time in the early 80s, of course, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He did things politicians don't do, like raise taxes.
Yeah.
In addition to cutting budgets, he took a stand, for example. You know, Vic always opposed the kicker law.
Mm-hmm.
That was a bad thing that was going to come back to haunt that. And that was the point where the recession hadn't started. It looked like we were,
yeah,
had a bunch of extra money, but he said we're going to regret it.
Yeah.
And that is very foresightful. But he was bucking the legislature there.
Yeah.
As you would conclude, of course, Vic would be, if he was in office now, he'd probably be a Democrat. I don't see how he could be a Republican.
Yeah, it's hard to see how that would work
in this climate today.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a diehard Republican until the day he died.
He was.
But just talking to his family, I discovered that his older brother, for instance, voted for Obama twice. And he never told Vic that.
No, Vic was very, very committed and loyal Republican.
Yeah.
But he was not, even in those days, I didn't consider him a far-out conservative.
Mm-hmm.
He was moderate on a lot of social issues, progressive on environmental issues.
Mm-hmm.
He did things with taxes and things that he had to do to get pragmatic.
Mm-hmm.
Today he'd have to be a liberal today. There'd be no, if you classified him in the camp.
Yeah.
Of course, because, I was reading a little thing about he was a minority himself, so he was sensitive about treatment of the minorities.
Mm-hmm.
But interestingly, when the Rajneesh were here, he wouldn't meet with the Rajneesh,
right,
because he didn't want to give them liability, some of his staff met with him. And he weathered that pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
He and Frohmeyer and those folks. That was pretty turbulent, little incident itself,
yeah,
in addition to everything else.
And yeah.
Vic had some turbulent times in his term. But interestingly, he was a very good retail ground level politician.
Mm-hmm.
He beat Tom McCall on McCall's comeback bid. You know.
Yeah.
And, McCall found out he wasn't as beloved as he thought. But anyway, that was a three way race. Roger Martin was in it too, as I remember.
Yeah.
But Vic was good at retail politics, and he liked it pretty much. He would, and he was very loyal to the party. I remember covering Dorchester well after he was governor, and he'd usually show up, he'd drive out there and take part, even though he didn't, some of the leadership that showed up he didn't agree with.
Mm-hmm.
So.
So what do you remember about the 74 campaign? He gets into the race as, basically a nobody. He knocks off Clay Myers, who everybody thought would win in the primary, and then goes on to lose to Straub. Mm-hmm. So what do you remember about that campaign?
Not too much.
Uh-huh.
Really, not too much. Of course, as I get older, I'm afraid I remember less, but... like you say, he was kind of a nobody. And so Straub was much better known, and so I don't think people gave Vic much of a chance. Came down in somewhat of a partisan vote, but he just didn't have the statewide exposure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, caucus leaders, as you know, and even speakers and presidents of the Senate, think they're really well known statewide. They're not.
Yeah.
You know, you can go down the street and ask, even with Courtney's visibility, who's the president of the Senate? And
yeah.
Find a lot of people that don't know. So he was one of those politicians that had to make a statewide run so he could make another one
mm-hmm.
and win.
Mm-hmm.
Because he really came from nowhere. And I don't remember too much more about that. I remember a little more about the Kulongoski campaign, because Kulongoski imploded, shot himself in the foot with a plant closure bill, for one thing.
So what were the dynamics of that plant closure bill?
Well, as I recall the details, companies had to give quite a bit of advance notice
mm-hmm.
to the community, to the employees, if we're going to close, and there might have been some economic, I don't know if you'd term them sanctions, but compensation involved.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember too much more about mm-hmm. that, but this was right in the 82, right in the midst of the Depression, when plants were closing and mills were closing. That was a wood product recession, because the construction industry fell apart.
Yeah.
And Kulongoski's timing was very bad. You know, he was a strong labor guy, but his timing was very poor.
Hi, guys.
Hi. You've got a call here.
Oh,
you can take the phone and see it from
I got a Skype
from Midlance or something.
Oh yeah. They called today.
Yeah.
Okay.
A message to call for your application or mm-hmm. something to that effect.
Yeah, it's paperwork I have to give in. So
okay.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Where's mom?
She went to the store.
Oh, okay. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's all right. It's okay.
So the plant could be labor.
Well, maybe other things. I mean, Kulongoski was a young, not well-known legislator who,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think he bit off a little too high in that race.
Mm-hmm.
But Vic had the big advantage of incumbency and whatnot. But Kulongoski, knowing it or not, shot himself in the foot with that bill. So that I remember that campaign more
mm-hmm.
than I do Vic's first one.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember the 78 campaign, when he was the not only the last Republican who served as governor, but he was also the last person to knock off a sitting governor when he beat Straub?
I remember more about Straub's foibles than I do about Vic's positives.
Mm-hmm.
Straub was a likable but kind of an odd guy, not
mm-hmm.
a particularly good speaker. I think he was bright and accomplished environmental things, but he didn't know how to take credit for things. I don't think he had a particularly good publicity staff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think for that reason he was kind of vulnerable. People didn't have a real great impression of him.
Mm-hmm.
He had some tumult because the Prop 13 in California passed in 78.
Yeah, that summer.
And he had to call a special session to put something on the ballot here. And so I think he got through that okay, but anyway, I don't remember. I can't tell you too much about other vulnerabilities.
Yeah.
So, this can trains have swum together.
Oh yeah, in the absolutely. Past,
and I can't.
Absolutely.
It's hard to delineate one from the other. It's too far back.
So what more stands out in that 82 campaign? You got Kulongoski imploding. Was there anything on Atiyah's campaign side that stood out?
Not very much comes to mind.
Okay.
Just, I think he did get, people thought he was doing a serviceable job and getting the state, I think, through the, when this recession started, and
mm-hmm.
he didn't have a strong opponent
mm-hmm.
in the other party.
Okay.
So, I don't remember too much more about it.
Okay.
Something pops in my head.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You talk about Atiyah and environmental things. What comes to mind when you think about those issues?
He was a conservationist. He liked to fish. He was a conservationist. I
mm-hmm.
think he got some land preserved in Central Oregon
mm-hmm.
on the Deschutes. There was some involved with the Warm Springs Indians that he worked with them. I read, and you do know this, I'm sure. I think I read about him that he was very strongly for the Columbia Gorge Scenic Area
mm-hmm.
Preservation Bill, and said he got the White House to persuade Reagan not to veto it.
Mm-hmm. Now, apparently Bob Packwood has a different story, and I hope to interview him next week.
Okay. Well, he's an interesting guy. He's 80 years old, and he's still working, I guess.
And yeah.
He's got a lot of energy.
Anyway. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. That's the story I've always heard, but it may be Packwood was probably in Hatfield, I suppose, were involved in it too, so.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember the Opal Creek issue? The reason I ask is because I always, my understanding of Opal Creek was always it was a Mark Hatfield thing. But it turns out that
George Atiyah.
Yeah, George Atiyah was
that was a nephew?
Yeah, nephew. Yeah, he's one of the twin brothers' sons, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He really wanted Opal Creek preserved,
mm-hmm.
and it turned out that much of the land in Opal Creek was owned by Bick's wife's family.
Oh, I don't
so it was all sorts of interesting things.
I don't remember that.
Okay.
I don't remember Hatfield being prominent in it.
Yeah.
In the outcome of it.
Yeah. So in economic stuff, do you get a sense, I mean, the economy starts falling apart 79, but the big crash comes in 80, and the huge crash comes in 82.
Yeah.
There's kind of, boom, interest rates go up, and then by 82, the timber industry looks like it's in free fall.
Mm-hmm.
Do you get a sense of the T administration in triage mode, the administration in... we've got to invest in the future mode, or just looking at, you know, our budgets that we've got to cut. I mean, what do you remember about their reaction to just all that economic bad news, just one right after the other coming through there?
Well, as I say, I always thought of Vic to be a steady and business-oriented, business-like operator.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember a lot of triage.
Mm-hmm.
Arm waving on the surface. He Mick was very, schooled himself very deliberately in the budget and paid a lot of attention first where it could be trimmed. This all part of the problem, and then his moderate side came in and he said they couldn't go any further, and of course he had a Democratic legislature, so they couldn't go.
Mm-hmm.
He was pragmatic, but I guess his administration, it was all him that came up with the temporary surtax.
Mm-hmm.
It helped solve the problem. But there were three special sessions, and I didn't cover one or two of those.
Mm-hmm.
I was in Portland. The one was a one-day thing. Well, maybe that was later, the two repealing the unitary tax.
Yeah, it's 84.
Yeah, that was 84.
Yeah. But like in 1980, apparently there was a long session in like January to February or March. And then there were two short sessions.
Yeah, the
that had very specific.
The 37-day one was the long one, yeah.
Yeah.
I recall. That was a lot of, that was the angst over the budget cuts and
mm-hmm.
surtax,
mm-hmm.
I recall. But, as far as investing in the future, Mick, that he probably had a hiatus in his work on that during the height of the recession, but he was very committed to that, much more so than Straub or McCall.
Mm-hmm.
As far as trade missions and contact with Asia and other markets,
mm-hmm.
Silicon Valley stuff.
Mm-hmm. So when he started doing those trade missions, I mean, in his first term, he does maybe four of them, and in his second term, he does 16 of them. You talk about colonists taking him to task on that. But what was the general sense that you remember? Were people saying, wow, this is a good idea? Or were people saying, why is he gone so often? Or how did people respond to that?
Oh, I think as a overall, the public thought it was fine for him to try to develop trade because the economy was, we had to diversify.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty plain to anybody that was studying what was going on,
mm-hmm.
the causes of the recession. Blanket Baker poked fun at him and stuff, and there's always some of that, but that didn't override, I don't think, the public sentiment about it.
Mm-hmm.
But Vic went, he did what he thought needed to be done, and he didn't, I really think he said it, and I really think he didn't, more than a lot of politicians didn't really pay attention to the reaction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't think he really did. If he did, it didn't show it.
Yeah.
Like I say, I've never heard of him calling up or a journalist or anybody else and chewing them out for something. Maybe it may well have happened, but I'm not aware of it.
Yeah. Yeah, apparently that attitude drove Denny Miles nuts.
He's trying to get victims.
Just take advantage of this stuff.
Well, but Denny's a little more high-strung than Vic was.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if high-strung is the word, but more reactive, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe they were a good pair because of that. It happened, two of them being overly reactive would probably have been too good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, do you remember any scandal kinds of things? I mean, Vic talks, and he did an oral history in the early 90s with the Oregon Historical Society. And the main thing he talks about there is he felt some people in the press were making a lot out of how much he was spending, like, on the trips. Or you know, a couple of other things like that. Did any of that resonate with you? Or was that...
I don't remember there being very much of that.
Okay. Okay.
At least in my memory.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there were some stories written about it, you know, there, there always are, but I mean, it, I guess Vic maybe was more sensitive, I suppose, to that because he felt he was on a good mission, more nitpicking, and that's you know, it happens in politics a lot. But
yeah.
But no, I don't, I mean, I guess in those days that would pass for a scandal.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't think there was any scandal there.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call it that.
Yeah. That's striking how different the rules were. I interviewed Gary Wilhelms, and he resigned in at some point, October or whatever, and the 1st of January he was back as a lobbyist.
Yeah.
Because there weren't those kinds of, you know, year off.
And
not
no restrictions, yeah.
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 He said it was very interesting walking into the Democratic caucus saying, "Hi, I'm the guy with the checkbook from the phone company."
Yeah. Right. Yeah, Gary was on the Ethics Commission with me for a while.
Uh-huh.
And then he went back to work for the Republican caucus.
Yeah.
Doing something, I don't know what he does.
Yeah. So comparisons of Atiyah with other governors? Is it a personality thing? Was there something about him being a moderate Republican as compared to other governors? Was it the times?
I guess you mean, did the time shape my impression of him? Or
yeah. So, for instance, if you were to compare him and Kitzhaber, would the difference be between, because they were different personalities, because of the time Vic was governor versus the times that Kitzhaber was governor? Would it be gregariousness? I mean...
I think it would be some of that. Yeah, Kitzhaber... went through a bunch of turmoil himself with the budget, of course. Why special session didn't we have? Maybe that helped me drive to me retirement. I kept saying I'm not going to be here in August anymore. But anyway, no, just contrasting those two. Vic was much more open and approachable than Kitzhaber to the press. I think maybe they were both behind the scenes players, for sure. And Kitzhaber's not necessarily a publicity hog either, but he was more of a loner. He worked behind the scenes well, but with the press and the public, I think he was searching for the words, but more aloof, more of an enigma, I think, in a way than Vic. If you covered Vic for a while, you know, a year or two, what you saw is what you had, you know. And I think he probably acted behind the scenes the same way he did talking to in the press room or anywhere else, in the lunchroom. We used to go down to the lunchroom, and he'd come down and eat in the lunchroom frequently. Kitzhaber never did that.
Yeah.
He didn't, Kitzhaber didn't like the press that much. And that, I don't hold that against in particular. Lots of politicians don't. But I think Vic was suited for the times, in the sense that he had a deep knowledge of state government and a deep resource in the legislature because he'd served there quite a while. And the combination was helped him steer things through, or another governor that had been thrown into that probably would have had a more difficult, quite a bit more difficult time.
How about comparing Atiyah and Goldschmidt? I mean, for Vic, there was a real sharp difference.
Oh, yeah.
When Vic came in, he kept basically most of Straub's staff.
Mm-hmm.
Straub had left him, here's how the governorship works. And so Atiyah set that up for Goldschmidt, who came in and fired everybody and threw out the instructions. And, so Vic saw just a real sharp difference.
Yeah, I think
there.
I read a Steve Dean column once that talked about Vic never mentioned his successor's name, but he didn't say good.
After 2002,
he didn't say good things about him either.
2004, whatever that was, yeah.
Interestingly, this is just a quick aside, but when I was entered to the Emerald at U of O, Goldschmidt's brother was the student body president. So
the guy who worked for the school
Steve
board?
Steve Goldschmidt.
Yeah, I got
to be pretty good friends with
Steve.
So I went to Neil's wedding, as a matter of fact.
Uh-huh.
That's a long, long time ago. But
yeah.
So I reflect on that way. Neil was a showboater. He was very bright,
mm-hmm.
and he was very politically adept, but he was a showboater. He wanted credit. He wanted, he was a bold mover. And I guess the bold moves, like you talked about, were getting rid of all the staff,
mm-hmm.
bringing his own in, which is sort of, Kate Brown didn't do that,
mm-hmm.
so far. So, I don't know how well Neil worked with the legislature. I think they were, I think he worked probably fine with Portland Democrats, but I don't think he had the same background skills that Vic did with the legislature overall.
Mm-hmm.
And Neil, at least on the surface, was more of a visionary, but he also wanted the credit for it and wanted to
mm-hmm.
Make a splash. Vic was a visionary in a lot of ways, but he didn't care about splashes. He didn't need publicity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he needed publicity, of course, and a politician does, but he didn't need adulation.
Yeah.
And I guess maybe Neil did.
Yeah.
Or anyway, Neil was closer to it, needing it.
Yeah. It fits in well with the anecdote about taking Tom McCall down to get rid of the Welcome to Oregon sign. Thanks for visiting.
Yeah.
At the California border.
Yeah.
And Vic's first idea was to blow up the sign.
I remember that.
And they actually went to Denny and said, Denny, you have to talk him out of this. And he got, it didn't get blown up. But they took Tom with them.
Yeah.
And McCall just reveled in it.
Mm, oh, sure.
And Vic was just kind of standing on the side saying, great. This is one of his last times he's going to be able to do this.
Yep. McCall accomplished a lot, of course, and has a great legacy, but he also was a showman. He came out of TV.
Yeah.
And he was great for the press because he was sort of one of us. He'd come down to the press room. And but not as much as Vic, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's why I told Vic when I gave him that plaque that I think he was even maybe more accessible than Tom. But Tom was a showboater, and he got things done because of it, but he still was.
Mm-hmm.
He loved the limelight.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that I remember that now, that anecdote, and that's blowing things up is not how I think of it.
Yeah.
That kind of attention. But I guess because he wanted more business and trade for the state, he wanted to remove barriers like that.
But one of the, also the resonances at that point was the Paul Lindman footage of the whale on the Oregon coast being blown up was fairly recent.
Oh, okay.
And we didn't want to go there either.
Okay. God, I was working in the AP Bureau in Portland that Sunday when they washed up.
Uh-huh.
Oh, man, what a mess. Trying to get pictures out of there.
Yeah.
Anyway, that brings back memories. Yeah, blowing up the whale, that didn't work so well for some people.
No.
It lumbered on the car.
Exactly. Big dents in your car caused by...
Yeah, you got to be careful blowing things up.
Yeah. So when you think back on Atiyah as governor and then ex-governor, how would you describe him? Just a few words.
In both contexts?
Or? Yeah, yeah.
Humble.
Mm-hmm.
Humble, unassuming. Personable, loyal, like I mentioned, loyal to his party, even though his party was running in different directions.
Mm-hmm.
But he still wanted to serve and try to contribute.
Mm-hmm.
He was on his, of course, you know, I think the Boy Scouts, but some other groups he was involved with. He kept participating in, I think, after he retired.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what he did at Pacific University. He was on the board.
He was on the board. It's the main thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I found out the reason he donated his archives to us is because when he started from 1959 until the 72 election, it was multiple member districts.
Right.
And so Pacific was part of his
right.
district.
Right, okay.
Because it was, you know, Pacific, I mean, great, so you're on the board, but I don't get it. But it turns out that's the reason.
That's right, multi-member districts, the 72 that changed.
Yeah.
That changed a lot in the logistics of the legislature. Those are the words that come to mind.
Uh-huh.
Maybe.
Yeah.
That's how it was, I guess. Cliche, but he was a genuine gentleman in his demeanor, his approach. And you know, he was the kind of politician, if you ran into a reporter like me, if you ran into him in the halls of the Capitol, wanted to talk with him, he'd walk down the hall with you and talk.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them will have a notebook in their hand, and then you'd be running somewhere else. You know, they're too busy.
Yeah.
But he was never like that. He'd always listen.
Uh-huh.
He might not give you a lot of answers, but he'd always listen to him, discuss things.
Yeah.
But so he came across as, I think, a gentle, laid-back man, but he was tough underneath.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was firm in his beliefs. Played football.
Yeah.
You all got a bid from the pros.
Yeah,
he was solid, I guess I'd call him also.
Mm-hmm.
He's real, real solid in his beliefs and his behavior.
Great. So anything else to add?
I don't think so.
Okay.
You might have drained my reservoir.
That's okay.
For... at least for the moment.
Uh-huh.
You know, that's the...
Yeah, if you look through clippings or, you know, something comes to you, just let
me
know.
Yeah, I let you know.
Yeah.
You have an email address?
Yeah, I'll give you a card.
Easier than calling.
I'll give you a card.
Yeah, that's a long time ago, you know, some of that stuff.
Yeah.
30 years ago.
In so many ways.
Longer than that when Big started. 59, you say that's the year.
58, he was elected. 59, he started.
I was still in high school.
Yeah, I was born.
Yeah, yeah.
It'd be so great if this was 15 years ago. And apparently there was an abortive attempt to do a biography that didn't work out.
Was there?
And about a year ago, Vic sent me an email from the person who'd been doing the biography, and it didn't work out, but she listed the people that she had interviewed, most of whom, when I talked to them, have never heard of her. So
oh, really?
We don't know what actually happened. But Vic had gone through and written D for dead and F for frail.
Oh, is that
and
right?
So when I started doing this, I started with the Fs. Do the Fs.
Well, that makes sense.
And, you know, between the time just of his memorial service last September and when I was able to get into this, two of them had already died.
Oh, really?
Dave Frohnmayer was literally yesterday. I was going to call Dave Frohnmayer.
Oh, were you?
And he wasn't on the F list.
Dave would have been a great resource.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't. Yeah. Well, I don't think anybody knew of his illness.
No,
apparently.
No.
Hardly anybody.
No. But apparently there were two attorney general, assistant attorney generals, who were in most of the meetings on the Rajneeshis and things.
Mm.
So I'm hoping I'd be able to get them. And
who were they?
I can't remember. I got it.
Yeah.
Just right around.
It's too bad about Dave. He was a great resource. Have you talked to Norma Paulus at all?
Norma's memory is going.
Yeah, okay.
And so I've talked to the people in her family.
I heard she had a mild stroke, but I don't know if that's true or not.
Well, I mean, it's not clear if it's dementia or if it's mild stroke, or whatever it is.
She came to mind because she was close to Frohnmayer politically.
Yeah.
They did a lot of stuff together. They
absolutely.
They got the open meetings law passed, I think, together and things like that.
Yeah.
But, Norma was appointed to the Ethics Commission when I was on it.
Uh-huh.
She was chairman, actually, then. And she served one meeting and resigned.
Huh.
And I heard that she'd had some kind of a mental stroke or some kind of medical problem.
Yeah.
It's been a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Two or three years ago. So
anyway,
I've heard of her, seen her since.
Well, yeah, I talked to Phil Kiesling, who actually recommended that Norma's long-term memory is actually pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got to.
Yeah, she comes to mind probably as Dave's closest political ally in the House, as I recall.
Yeah.
Similar personalities, and so she would have had things to say about Vic, but I don't know what kind of condition she's in either.
Yeah.
I'm very fortunate that I'm not in the F category yet. Getting old, but not very.
Yeah, and I have, as I go further, I have more questions about the Atiyah family and Vic's older brother, who's now 93.
Mm.
But he's off in the desert for the winter, so it's like, please make it back.
Yeah,
please make it back.
How's his wife doing?
Not well. She also dementia. And she, the same day that Vic fell,
the hip thing. Got relatives and people that age when the hips break.
Oh, yeah.
It's downhill.
Yeah. And so there was a long time. I think they have her in a place right now that they're all happy with.
Yeah.
But rehab places and, just stuff that I've dealt with this with my family, too.
Sure. I know.
Boy, there's a kind of a grim world out there.
I know. I had a sister that broke her hip when she was 92, half-sister.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't live very long.
Yeah.
But I just wondered if his wife's a resource for
no.
him.
No, no.
Not really.
No, she's totally out of it. Well, great. Well, thank you very much.
Well, sure. Maybe I added something.
Yeah. Well, this is good.
Maybe all 1 cent in the book. Or